Mr. Brown, rail 4. Right, Mr. Brown, so you were posted to another Daylight battalion, and you mentioned that at least one other member of your trainee squad went with you. Could you just describe what the setup was at this new posting? What you remember about arriving there and so on?
I don't remember much about arriving, or anything about arriving. I just remembered that, you know, we were put into a sort of signal platoon, but within a very short space of time, I was sent on another infantry course, and we were taken away from the main battalion, and into a separate part of Yorkshire, and we had a few weeks training then, and that was when you were trained in the various movements, pincer movements, or a left flanking movement, or a right flanking movement, and about reading the landscape and seeing a bushy top tree at 400 yards, you know, set your rifles, and given various training like that. And after that training, that's when I became a Lance Corporal. Mm. Must have been sent on this training and given a bit more specialist training and made a Lance Corporal.
Now, this field craft, was that... Had you done that kind of work before, or was this your first introduction to it?
I hadn't done it before, no.
So the whole business of reading the landscape and lines of approach and all that was new to you?
That's right.
Now, when you're on this course, were you back with kind of rifle and Bren gun and so on, or were you still, were they trying to integrate the signal equipment into that?
No, there's no signal equipment there. Nothing to do with the signals at all.
So it was just pure infantry work?
Bren gun and rifle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did they use live ammunition against the...
I can't remember having live ammunition used.
There was no live ammunition used in terms of, you know, as a training exercise used against... You know, flight over your heads, that kind of thing. Yeah. How did you cope with that course then?
Well, it was all right. You know, I've fortunately always been pretty fit and been able to run and march. And I think the people who couldn't keep up were the people who suffered. It wasn't so much the training with the various methods and equipment. It was the physical aspect of the whole training that took most out of people.
Now, you've mentioned Hornsey. What kind of place was that?
I think it was just a quiet seaside town. There wasn't much doing there. A few dancers, I remember, and it was a place, you know, where you could go for table tennis and have a drink of tea, etc. And that was about it.
And how was the battalion organised in this place? I mean, what kind of billets did you have? What kind of accommodation?
God, I can't remember.
And so you went away on this course, then back to the 14th Battalion, and would you now be assigned, that would be to the signal platoon of the 14th Battalion? And what do you remember about that? Any personalities stand out from this signal platoon?
No, it just seemed to be, you know, general, nothing special.
And had the officers started to make themselves felt at this stage? I mean, can you remember your signals officer in the 14th?
No, I can't. Mm-hmm.
Now, with the 14th Battalion, for the first time you were with an infantry battalion, you know, the specialist companies and so on. Did you go out on any kind of so-called schemes, exercises with the 14th Battalion as a signaller, you know?
Yes, I did. We did have schemes at that stage, and you went out for a day and used the radio, etc.
And what would you be doing with the radio, with the signal platoon, when you're on an exercise?
Well,
how would it be?
You'd be with an officer, which I can't remember anybody, and expected to pass messages one company to another, or from a company back to headquarters, and so on.
Could you just describe how, in a typical exercise, and this is before we get into action, but in a typical exercise, how the signalers would be organised in relationship to, the rifle companies and the headquarters company and the battalion headquarters and so on? How would you be kind of set up as a unit when you're on the pretend battlefield at this stage? How would you be organized?
Well, you'd be set up with each company. Each company has signalers with them.
And how many would be with each company?
Three, as a rule. That was the same in the 16th Battalion.
And what, three men, what would they have between them in terms of equipment?
Well, they'd have a radio, and in some cases you had to carry cable and possibly a handset as well.
So there'd be three men up with a rifle company.
Mm.
And who would you be communicating with? What would be the first point of contact further back?
Well, it would be the headquarters.
And who would be with the signal platoon at headquarters? Who would be the signalers there?
People who were stationed at headquarters at that time.
And how many of those would there be, and what would they be equipped with?
Well, what was left of the platoon after the companies had been supplied, they would be at headquarters. And they would be manning sets, etc.
Yeah. So in a typical example, there'd be three men forward with a company.
Mm.
And that company would be assigned a specific objective of some kind, or a specific part of the territory. You'd be communicating back to headquarters.
Mm.
Now, where would the signals at headquarters, what would the next link in the chain be going backwards? Who would they be communicating with? Would that be going back to brigade? Or
it would be. I don't remember that in the 14th, to be honest, but I do remember it from the 16th, that you had a couple of brigade signalers with you at battalion headquarters, and they had their sets tuned back to brigade.
But in the normal run of things, your sets would just be for communication within the battalion.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be any later on, there wouldn't be any possibility of being able to talk with the Sherwood Foresters or the Leicesters or whatever.
No.
Yeah. Now, so you've got your three men forward with the radio. What about the so-called runner? Would that be an element in the signal platoon, or would that be just part of the...
No, we didn't have runners.
And what about the dispatch riders? How would they be organised? Because apparently they were part of the signal platoon.
They were, I suppose they were running messages that we know not of.
So basically it was three men forward with each company.
That's right.
Can you remember anything about which company you were attached to with the 14th?
No, very vague memories of the 14th, to be honest.
And what were the billets like that you had at Hornsey? What was the accommodation like?
No, I can't remember that at all.
Now, obviously the 14th Battalion was a unit that was still in England.
Mm.
During your period with it, do you have any memories of men being drafted, friends being, posted away to the operational units? Because apparently that was happening all the time.
Well, that was happening all the time, yes. Because we moved from Hornsey to Durham. We went back to Durham, the 14th Battalion, after the spell at Hornsey. And this business of people being put on a draft for overseas was just a continuous programme. People were being fed into the 14th, presumably, from different places, and then fed out from the 14th overseas.
Did you have any thoughts at this stage? I mean, obviously you knew you were in the DLI, you knew you were in an infantry battalion, so you knew at some stage that you would be overseas.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any thoughts or preferences or ideas about maybe where you might like to be sent, or maybe where you might desperately not want to be sent? Was there any thoughts of talk amongst yourselves about things like
no,
that?
No, there wasn't. I mean, at that time, of course, D-Day hadn't arrived, and there weren't many places where you could be sent at that time, and it would have been North Africa if we'd been sent early enough, because Italy was later, and Sicily was later, Greece possibly, but there was only North Africa really that you could think about.
Now, we're into kind of like, you know, 1943.
Mm.
Now, by this stage, the Americans had started to make their presence felt in England, as you say, prior to D-Day. Do you have any memories of other units, other Commonwealth units, American units, or the British Army? You know, any kind of rivalries or any kind of problems at any stage?
I never came in contact with any American units. There didn't seem to be any American units at Hornsea, and when we got to Durham, there weren't any American units there.
What about other British regiments and so on? Was any kind of...
we didn't come in contact with them, really. You know, you're sort of isolated within your battalion, and there wouldn't be any other groups of soldiers too near, I shouldn't think.
So you had this period at Hornsey, then you were back in Durham.
That's right.
Not
at Bransforth.
Can you remember where you were?
Yes, we were just in Durham City itself. As you were going out of Durham towards Darlington, we were on that area there, just between Durham City itself and what you would call the Great North Road, which was going down towards Darlington.
And was that the whole battalion was there?
Yes, it would be.
And you mentioned your promotion to Lance Corporal. What difference did that make to how?
Not a great deal.
You were given some authority by this.
Well, I suppose a little authority, and you had to take charge of the signals office at times, but it wasn't a big onerous job, I don't remember.
Now, some of the veterans have talked about how they weren't keen on promotion at all. They weren't keen on any kind of responsibility. What did you feel about it?
I didn't feel anything at that stage. I was quite happy to go along with what was happening. And as I say, it wasn't onerous. I think I was acting unpaid, so it didn't make much difference from the pay point of view. So I just went along with it.
And can you remember what your pay was at this stage?
No, I seem to remember that it must have been about 2 shillings or 2 and 6 pence a day.
And did that last you through the week?
It had to.
But did it? Did you?
I found it did, yes.
Other veterans have talked about, you've mentioned that, you weren't keen on the pub. Other people have talked about, getting into all kinds of problems with things like gambling within the barracks and so on. Was there any of that going on at this?
No, I didn't do any gambling, or there wasn't any that I knew of at Chichester or Bransforth or Hornsey or Durham. I didn't come across any, large-scale gambling.
So you were back up in Durham. Again, was the discipline more relaxed here than before, or was it just more of the same of what it was?
I didn't find the discipline very much at Durham at all. You know, it seemed quite relaxed.
I should have mentioned this earlier. Other veterans have talked about how when they were at Brandsmith, Durham was out of bounds when you're on short leaves and so on.
No, I don't remember that. I mean, I had to go into Durham to catch a bus up to where Betty was living at that time, and there wasn't any difficulty there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you were in Durham and you were waiting whatever was going to come.
Yeah, just as regards being not able to go into Durham. Before I was transferred overseas, we were actually billeted in Durham itself, in one of the main roads in Durham City. I don't know whether you were just sent there from the battalion, just waiting to go overseas, but I remember being in Durham itself. So there wasn't any limits to where you could go in Durham.
What kind of place was it during the war, Durham?
Durham. More or less, as I remembered when I went to live there, it didn't seem much different at all.
And obviously you wouldn't be troubled by air raids and so on?
No.
To any extent? Yeah.
At Hornsey, we didn't suffer with air raids, but you could hear the bombers going over because a lot of airfields in Yorkshire. And you could hear the planes droning over when they went on bombing raids.
Now, had you kept up your interest in the cinema at this stage? You were still...
No, we didn't go to the cinema as much then.
And what about football in the 14th Battalion?
None that I remember. No, I don't think I ever played in the 14th there.
Now, apparently, the 14th and the 17th Battalion, like the 16th, you know, they formed at the same time, but they never went overseas. They were... You know, as you mentioned earlier, they were like a reinforcement battalions. When you were with the 14th Battalion, did you feel as if you were with an operational battalion? Or did it feel like that? Did it feel like you were just kind of making up the numbers and waiting for something?
Yes, I didn't feel like an operational battalion at all.
And what about your officers and NCOs? Were they...
Don't remember much about them.
I mean,
didn't seem to interfere with my life very much at all.
What I'm getting at is, was there any sense of maybe some of them looking as if they weren't kind of fit for overseas service? They were old, or were they?
Were
they still young?
No, I don't remember anything like that.
Just on the signal platoon, just on the mechanics of the signal platoon. About how many men would be in the signal platoon?
Maybe about 30, I suppose. Hmm.
So it would be slightly smaller than a rifle company platoon, or would it be the same?
Not much difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not much difference.
So you were back in Durham. Mm. What happened then?
You were given 14 days embarkation leave and posted overseas.
And when you got your embarkation leave, did they give you any sense of where you'd be going to?
No.
So that was just a complete mystery. It was you knew you were going somewhere, but you didn't know where it was going to be.
That's right.
And what did you feel when you were given this leave?
Well, you didn't know what to expect, really. You know, no matter how they train you and whatever they say to you, you don't really know what it's going to be like until you get there. So I suppose you feel a bit apprehensive. But once again, you've just got to accept and get on with it.
And did you feel like a fully trained soldier now at this stage?
Oh, I felt reasonably capable, yes.
And?
I don't doubt there could have been a lot more training for a lot longer period, but...
Where did you think you were weak? What areas do you think you were weak? What did you... You said you were fully fit. You were fit.
I was fit enough. I think it was, the general mechanics of attacking a spot and getting to the spot as best you could and as unseen as you could. And I wasn't sure about that aspect of it.
So possibly they could have put more emphasis on the field craft, do you think?
Possibly.
Because you don't seem to have did that much of that.
They did do it before he became the Lance Corporal, but...
What about the equipment? You hadn't been in action, you'd never used it in action yet, but at this stage, did you have faith in the equipment, the radios particularly?
Yes, I had no reason to doubt the radios and the equipment at that time. And the Brens and the rifles. Oh, while at Durham, I remember being trained with the Piat, which was an anti-tank handheld monster. That was the only other piece of equipment that I remember being trained with in Durham.
Could you just describe that and how they did try to train you with it, what this weapon was?
Well, it seemed from memory like a long barrel, like a mortar turned, instead of pointing up the way a mortar shoots up, it was parallel to the ground, and it was handheld, and it made a terrific bang, and of course it hadn't a big range. I think it was only somewhere between 50 and 100 yards range, so you had to be pretty close to the tank before you could have any hope of doing any damage. But all I can remember was firing it and being partially deaf for a couple of days afterwards because of the bang.
And what did you fire it at?
Well, you fired it at a normal sort of rifle target.
So it was a target rather than...
It wasn't a tank.
And did you hit it?
I believe I did. I wouldn't be sure about that.
What did people think about this weapon when you were training with it? Did you think it was something that...
Well, we thought it was a bit clumsy. And we didn't really, I think, have much faith in it. We didn't think it was a marvellous weapon that was going to change the face of the war at all.
So there wasn't generally much confidence in this thing. Mm-hmm. What about the Thompson or the Sten gun, I think, which came in at this time? Was there any contact with these at this stage?
No, not with the Sten gun, no.
And again, I mean, this is a weapon that was probably phased out, but at any point did you encounter the boys' anti-tank rifle, the big...
No.
So that had gone by this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So you had your 14 days embarkation leave. What did you do in those 14 days? Can you remember?
Got engaged. I think it was October the 2nd. No, it couldn't have been. Betty would know. But, got engaged, I think. And generally tried to have a good time.
And at the end of the 14 days, where did you have to go to? What did you have to do?
We went to Newcastle Station, and then we got a train to Glasgow, and we sailed from the Clyde.
And was that a draft of recruits, a draft of soldiers, rather?
Mm-hmm.
And about how many men would be in the draft?
Couldn't tell you.
And how many of those would be men that you knew already from the 14th Battalion?
No, I couldn't remember numbers of that either.
So you're up in Scotland, you're on this troop ship. Can you remember the name of the ship?
Yes, the Champollion. was a friendship.
And what was it, a converted liner or what?
I think it was a converted liner. I just remembered a lot of seasickness and so on, because it got quite choppy when we got round the coasts.
And how many men do you think were on it?
I wouldn't like to say. No.
And were they all mixed up from different units or different services?
I don't remember.
And what were the conditions like on board the ship?
Not very brilliant. You were way down below, and you know, just sort of tables run out from the bulkhead, and I think there were hammocks, probably hammocks to sleep in.
Now, you mentioned seasickness. Were you seasick?
Yes.
Now, what about the fellow soldiers? About what percentage do you think were seasick?
Were seasick? An awful lot, I should think. I remember the first breakfast, the first morning, seemed to be fatty bacon. And there were a lot of green faces around. And I think mostly when you got round to the bay off Spain, you know, it got quite choppy there as well. And there was quite... I think I was seasick for about 3 days.
And what was your morale like at this stage?
Pretty desperate.
Did you know where you were going when you were embarked from Scotland?
No, I didn't know where I was going.
And when did they tell you? When did you find out?
It must have been later on, sometime during the voyage, because there was some trouble in the Mediterranean. There had been some torpedoing. And I know we seemed to stop at Gibraltar, whether there was trouble with the Champollion itself, I'm not sure. But we went, seemed to go on from there alone. We were in a convoy at the beginning. We seemed to go on from there alone, and you know, it was really going at some speed after that.
Were there any duties that had to be performed when you're on the ship?
No.
Any discipline of any kind, enforced inspections, that kind of thing?
No, I can't remember anything special there.
And, again, I mean, who would be given the orders at this stage with your group? I mean, would there be a corporal or a sergeant or whatever assigned to...
I should think so, yeah.
But there's nothing sticks in
the mind.
Yeah.
Nobody could have given me orders for the first 3 days in any case.
And you weren't troubled at all by kind of, well, you've mentioned this business of the torpedo and you stayed in Gibraltar. Mm. Were you confined to the ship at Gibraltar?
Oh, yes.
There's no chance of...
This is just what we were told, you know. I couldn't vouch for any of this.
So where did the ship finally get to?
I think it was Philippeville, where we finally...
And that's in North Africa.
Docked, yeah.
Mm. And what was your first impression of that place?
Ooh, dusty. Pretty dirty. Arabs sitting along when you had to walk from the ship to wherever you were going at the march. Arabs sitting along selling dates, which I thought... would be pretty dusty as well after everything passed. So it was really dust as far as I remember.
And had the authorities given any kind of talks about, you know, you were arriving in this new environment, this new place, this Africa, was any kind of advice on, you know, how to deal with the situation or
No. Well, of course, there was no fighting there then. I mean, the fighting had stopped in North Africa, so there wasn't that to worry about.
And, Philip, you got to Philippeville. Where did you go to in Philippeville? What was the barracks?
We just went into barracks there.
And were you all DLI men in this group, the men that you were with at this stage?
No, I think it would be a mixture. I can't think we were all DLI people in that barracks, no. I think it was just a holding place for transferring people across to Italy.
And so by this stage you knew that was the destination?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you first got on the ship, though, would it be the case that the thing could have gone to Burma or something, and you knew
well,
that
it could have done.
You didn't know...
No.
Where you were going to.
No.
And if you'd have gone to Burma, it wouldn't have been a big surprise, really, I suppose.
Well, I should think that if we'd been going to Burma, we'd have been issued with a different kit. We probably had different kit to take with us. But I suppose you could have done that.